and Susan and Ruby and Laurie. I don't think there's any of the rest of the children even. I didn't know all of them names at all, but Clarence. Laura. Four boys, I think. And two girls. One girl, she was killed in St. Augustine, felt like something would break my ankle, but I guess it's just in my nerves.
Legs just a tingle. Well, you just got around all over that area down there.
More than you just come to me. I didn't visit them.
They just came to you?
I hear it through the neighbors, you know. They here to church. There's some neighbors I visit. And old man Pardee, Will Pardee, she's her name, mother, my father. And he chewed tobacco, smoked, and used snuff if he couldn't get the other two. Couldn't get his smoking tobacco or his chewing tobacco, he used snuff. In the roundabout, he'd run out of his tobacco since I don't think it's years. No, I think he did. But anyway, when he'd get out of these things, right out of the house, he'd send one of the boys down there to borrow some tobacco or snow one. Are you just going to give you mine?
I got some.
Yeah, you stingy with your coffee.
That's breakfast coffee.
I don't care if it was midday coffee.
You drink coffee?
I don't drink it now like I did. I used to drink a cup and a half for breakfast, maybe two cups for breakfast, in between breakfast. Cooking dinner, you know.
Oh, really?
Bring the cold. It wouldn't be cold. It'd have to be a little bit warm. I'd bring the pot. Make a new pot for dinner. Drink coffee.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
You mean you all have it for dinner, too?
I used to have three times a day, and a lot of times in between breakfast, dinner, supper, and going to bed. It was all gone, you know.
What'd you use, McElhouse? Arbuckle.
We used to use Arbuckle. And we use Maxwell House now.
Yeah.
See this? Charma. That used to be a good green can coffee. That folk couldn't get that.
Yeah.
No.
Now you never parched it yourself.
Oh, yes, sir. I've parched a many and a many a pound of coffee.
Oh, how do you buy it? 100 pounds?
Not quite that much. My father used to buy quite a bit green coffee.
Yeah.
And you know that Arbuckle's a lot of times, you get it green. Mm. It's in packages, it says green. And the parchment, Papa always got parchment. Mom would say, you know, there'd be coupons on the sides of the Arbuckle factory. Mama saved, I don't know how many. She's got little trinkets like that, salt and pepper shakers, and I believe she got a cream dish, sugar dish, salt and pepper shaker, and there was something else. And she set off one time, and got her a what? I mean, a clock. Anxious little thing. It's not that big around.
Yeah.
And brass trim. And the winding and setting. My nose is itching again. And I don't seem to know the hands. The face was white, like any ordinary alarm clock. It had the little brass bell on top. And of course the black hands. But the outside case, it was painted in little, I don't know why you know children painting things now, but it's kind of like what they call the
finger.
Mm-hmm. Like the round on it. Like mm-hmm. It had been a big piece of metal and had been painted that way. And they cut all around to make that clock outside. Hmm. And that clock lasted for years and years and years. I know it was small. And she had. And I don't know, she didn't. What? Something else got. For those coupons.
With the coupons.
Or for the package.
Now there's your mama.
My mama, yes, sir. And. Well, before me and Frank met and married, Aldridge had Papa. She couldn't read nor write. My mother couldn't. She could read print, but she couldn't read writing, and she couldn't write. And just a few months before, maybe a year before she died, Rosalie and Eddie got her to where she could write her name.
Is that right?
And she could write Margaret if she learned how to place letters. And she could write Margaret, Americus, Hill, Dixon. Get it all down there just as good as if I wrote it. And Papa told her one day, he said, Maggie, he says, why in the world? Why haven't you gone years and years ago to help you learn to write? I was just afraid I couldn't do it, Dad. I was just afraid. I'm, oh, my goodness alive. I don't do good writing myself, but you could do as good as I do, huh? No. And why and how she caught on so quick. And yeah. I know, because I watched that. The kids come to me, one while the others showing what to write this in there. But she never wrote a letter to anyone in her life. And she never read a letter from anyone in her life.
Oh, honestly.
Gotta drink too much of it.
Excuse me. That's what does me good.
Yeah.
You know, I took a big bottle like that to fridge it. I go in then. I drank about six waters. I did before I got sick.
Just drink it down.
Just drink it down. You need it. Don't you take a walk around. Men's known drinking. And in no time, I just be burping sort of way down me and my stomach under my bones down here. Just feel, boy, just feel like the biggest relief. And after I got where I just didn't care for anything, you know, see, didn't care what happened, what come, or what went. Didn't care much about anything. All right,
coughing
until my head felt like the top of it was coming off. I tell them now, I believe I had all my brains off.
How come you didn't cough so much?
Well, it's my condition, you see. That's what caused me the salt in my system.
Oh,
affected my heart and lungs and my kidneys and all those piled right up one time. And it all comes back cold. Cold. And never cold for nothing.
Yeah. And just wear you out.
Wear myself out coughing.
But you, Pepsi, that old coffee you used to drink wouldn't do that for you.
Yeah, I have belch from coffee. I drink coffee. And I'll tell you, I got a great niece. If she eats or drinks anything that causes a burp to come up, then she won't stop at one or two burps. You just go around, she can go around the rest of the day a burping. If she wanted to, she can stop, but she just she'll go right on.
That's just a trick she learned, isn't it?
Huh. And she used to take these small Pepsi colas and take the bottle as she gets her drink and suck it up to a man on the outside and hold the bottle on her lips and make a hollow look and pull it up.
I don't know how in the world she'd do that.
I don't either. She said, wait, let me loosen up on it before you take it off my mouth.
Where does she live, Miss Sue?
Up in Callahan. Callahan. Yeah, but she lives with her father and mother and grandma.
Yeah.
They live out about. Well, Callahan's about, I'll say, 20 miles, 15, 20 miles from Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And they live 2 or 3 miles out from the town part of Callahan. They go, somebody go school that.
Who is this Cousin Lonnie that teased you all?
Who? Lonnie.
Cousin Lonnie?
Someone will be a cousin to me.
That teased you all?
It's my first cousin, Lonnie Dixon.
Yes.
My father's brother's son.
Yes. Now, when was that? When you was growing up?
Well, most of it was all about grown.
Oh, really?
He was the one tried to make me laugh the day I was married, but he didn't laugh.
I mean, while you being married?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when he went right across from me, I looked over there at him and he didn't make all that. And the preacher was in between, you know, the preacher was facing us. And we backed up to another window. And Lonnie was sitting with him up, and he was making all kinds of faces. Twist. And he had wavy hair. Twist it around. And he took and bush it up and make ugly face. And I just looked right on when it come time for me to say I do or I will or anything. He just knows when I was going to say them words that I just cracked wide open laughing.
Yeah.
I stayed disarming as an old shoe.
But he tried.
He tried, but he didn't get no
thing.
It was all over with. They all, the ones, you know, they come to kiss the bride. And so
yeah.
Boom. Boom. And when he comes, he's gonna hug and kiss his cousin, you know. I was his cousin. He says, I says, and you didn't succeed, did you? I got a life threatened. He says, he's nobody, I'm going to hug you harder. Shaking Frank's hand and going around. And Mr. Anderson, my husband's boss man and my father's boss man and my cousin's boss man. They were all laughing, talking, going. And he was a Swede, Mr. Anderson. He walked up, he says, "Fellow Lonnie," he says, "you didn't make such a succeed after all, did you?" He says, "I seen you sitting over there in that window making faces at Miss Annie Pearl." And Frank says, "I like chokes if death though." And then I feel her arm touch me once in a while, and I knew what she meant, not play. Says, "But I just began to think if something didn't turn off, I was going to lay." I said, "Yeah, I think I felt you were." And that took on the sand as me, that lay.
Pick me up.
Oh. He's trying to kiss her. And he didn't succeed.
He tried to make me laugh when I said I will.
Oh, couldn't lie.
And I didn't. And then when they were all coming around, congratulations, you know, he was going to hug me and kiss me. And he says, "But I says, you thought you were smart, and didn't you?" I says, "You didn't succeed. You want the next time." He says, "What do you mean? What did I do?" I said, "Something over there making that ugly face, making faces, and twisting your hair up, kinking it up, and then making funny faces through your finger, peeping around the preacher."
Yeah.
And that's the way. Frank was just about to...
Frank saw it.
Frank, he was just about to bust open to life.
Oh, he was.
He never even got a grin out of me. And when he was gonna hug and kiss me, and he was gonna hug and kiss Frank, Frank says, "I'll shake hands with you, but you ain't gonna kiss me."
He must have been a bird.
And Mr. Anderson, the boss man of Pop and Frank and Lonnie, he come walking up. He says, "There, Miss Annie Pearl," he says, I just knowed that cousin of, he was sweet, you know, he says, "I just knowed that that cousin of yours sitting over there in the window was going to make you laugh." He says, "I never seen anybody hold such a close, calm disposition as you have." He says, "I'd have just known you was going to laugh." I have no say in that. I ain't going to laugh next time either.
Well, everybody out there could see him going on, taking on, but the preacher, everybody but the preacher.
Oh, the preacher. And Mama, I could say, Mama was over here.
Yeah.
And Papa was over here. And I was looking at Mama, and I could see her look at Lonnie.
She'd give him a sign.
Mm-hmm. And Papa, he'd kind of, they wrote on him. I could see what was going on, except so far. And there was some more neighbors and friends. Wasn't very many young people down there in that community to invite to a wedding or anything. More old bachelor men than anything else.
Oh, really? Like Frank and Jim.
Well, there was Leo Stanston, Roy Stanston, who was that other? That lives down on Lake Apopka. And Jim, he was sitting over in one window looking at Lonnie. He was laughing at Lonnie's funny doings. I think he thought I'd get tickled at him laughing at Lonnie. Because whenever Jim get tickled, he just sit and shake. He wouldn't make no noise, he'd just shake.
Yes.
Didn't make any difference either. Didn't make me laugh.
I don't see how you kept a straight face.
You had it all over. I was almost too scared to lie.
Now, you had to go off and leave all that.
What?
You left down there and come on up here.
Oh, no, sir. We just walked across the road up into our little house across on the hillside over there, yeah, in Orange Grove.
Yeah. But you didn't live down there long.
Well, I was married in 13.
Yeah, come up here in 17.
15.
I mean, 15, wasn't it? Well, you see, you
But if my mother had got well and lived on, I doubt if we'd ever moved. After Mama died, Uncle Martin's wife died.
Oh. Oh, your mama never come up here.
Mama, we live down in Orange County.
Yeah.
So we come up, me and Frank come up here.
Yes. And then Cousin Lonnie, that was the end of him after y'all moved up here.
Well, no. He quit his job. Well, he didn't quit, but... And he quit in a way, but what I mean, he wasn't fired or anything. But he went back to Georgia to help his father with the fall crops and all. All the boys up there was marrying and then getting off here and yonder. Donnie was the oldest. Bob and Tom was already married. It was Pete and Henry and Lonnie that wasn't married. One girl wasn't married. One girl was married and one wasn't. And my grandfather, he died. And then a few years later, my oldest uncle and my youngest uncle, he died. And then a few years later, my oldest uncle died. And then a few years after them, see them before them boys, there's Uncle Jim, Uncle John, Uncle Will, Papa. Well, I said Grandpa. That needs me to come in with the five. There's Grandpa, Uncle Will. I say every one of them died, you might say, with heart trouble.
Oh.
Every one.
Yeah. But now, you missed Cousin Lonnie after you moved off up here.
No, sir. He'd been going back to Georgia before we were from down here.
But you missed him after you went up to Georgia.
Well, like you'd miss anyone out of the family.
Sure.
He was almost like them, because they got there with us.
Sure.
And I...
You must have been pretty lonesome after you got up here in this city with all your friends and your family and all down there.
Well, long then, I could make friends or I could leave friends alone. I could make them or leave them. It's just ones that I'd meet, their appearance and the actions and all. If I thought I understood it well enough to continue on, I'd continue on with it, but if I didn't understand, I didn't pay much attention and went my way. But I found a whole lot going my way that I'd have found if I'd have went on with the rest of them. I found it the easy way. I didn't have to get in and make excuses for that or the other. And but I'd like to associate with these people or not.
Yeah.
And if at any time they come around, I try to treat them right, even if I didn't think I was going to like them. And I hadn't heard anything about it. There's always something person that give me a chance to kind of pushed aside and not hurt nobody.
Yeah. Now that's after you come up here you're talking about.
Yes.
Well, you'd run into quite a few people first and last around there, wouldn't you?
There's been a lot of people I've met up with, got acquainted with. And a lot of them's moved away and a lot of them's passed away.
Yeah.
A lot of them have come to your house.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of them were good, clean, decent friends. And a lot of them, I would have much rather if they had a hadn't come, but I wouldn't say no.
Yeah. When did Everett take up over at your house, Miss Chitty? That's when your children was growing up.
Mm-hmm. My children was growing up.
Yeah. That's way long past when we were talking about.
Well, now I'm going to tell you. My boys, Everett Smith, always went to Williston, not always either, but pretty much all the time on Saturday evening, Saturday night, they'd go to Williston.
And go to show.
Go to show, and then I think later on, years later on, they finally got where they got. Everett was a Methodist, but he got to coming down there to our church.
Oh, you mean way on back there he did?
And then when he got coming so regular and all, you know, he finally joined our church. Well, being of our denomination, our faith and belief, and everybody worked right along together, you see. But now, if he hadn't left Methodist and joined the Baptist, why, he would have always felt like he was a little drag or left out or something. But going down, getting in with the young people at Baptist Church there,
yeah,
more so on his size and age, a lot of them were, he kind of just drifted off from Methodist. Well, his mother was Baptist. And I think his father was Baptist. I'm not sure. Well, Mr. Eddie Smith was Baptist. I think he was Baptist. And I think his grandfather was Baptist. But at this time, you know, too old and feeble to get around to any kind of church much. But I think the rest of Everett's people, his sister and brothers, didn't have but one sister. And they all, I think, kind of taking side Methodist Church and things like that. But, and Frank were Methodist when we come up to Flemington. But the Methodist Church, we have that Shiloh. And the Baptist Church right there, you might say.
And a nice one.
And Frank, before I joined the Methodist, he was a Baptist. I joined the Methodist. That's what all my people were. And he joined the Methodist by faith and letter, you know. And I joined, and I had to be sprinkled. I could if I'd want to, I reckon they'd baptize me. They didn't seem to baptize much along then. Anyway, when we come up to N 17, we had a month's revival, day and night. War coming on, you know, and all like it was. There's a lot of different preachers coming, you know. Not one Baptist, but they were all Baptist preachers, I understand, but some different towns and places around. Maybe one would come out and help out a regular home preacher.
Yeah.
a week, day and night. Well, they'd go back, they'd come in another one. That way, you know, sometimes though we'd have three and four preachers to eat and sleep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And during that time, it was right along, oh, September something. Anyway, July, August, it was September, I guess, because Margaret wasn't hardly 3 months old. Frank comes around, Mommy says, I think I'm going back to my old stand. Well, I've been listening for him to say he's going back to his Baptist unit.
Mm-hmm.
I'd made up my mind. Whenever he opened the gate, I was going to follow him. So I didn't say nothing. I told Uncle Martin that. He says, yes, as Frank's worrying, he hates to leave you, knowing you Methodists, and your church is up yonder, and you just can't get up then. And he wants to go back to it. I said, are we just going to let Frank go back, Uncle Martin? And I said, Uncle Martin, I've been thinking for a long, long time. See, we'd been at the college in November, 1915. And we'd been up here all that time. Of course, we went to the Baptist church. And we would drive up to the Methodist church once in a great while. And always had their meetings in the evening. Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot of friends up there.
Mm-hmm. We have friends up at Shiloh Methodist Church. We just went up. And I never knew Methodists to treat people is cold. That was before either one of us joined them. I had never seen Methodist people treat people as cold as they did us. So when our revival started in 17, I told Pastor Frank, I said, I've never been to a Methodist church that people treat just a cold. Why, even before I joined the Methodist church, we'd always look around and see who all was there, you know. And we knew that in Long Gow's church, well, we'd take a book, and if the number was called, you'd find that number, and you'd go up and down the aisle and find out if they had books, need books, and
yeah.
I always thought the Methodist was the friendly type of Christianity. Frank says, me too. He says, I never seen. Told Uncle Marshall, and he says, why are the people up there at Shiloh Church so cold? I says, why, they're colder than a regular old hard shell, Uncle Mark. And he gets late. I says, well, a hard shell will treat you with more friendship than that church up there does.
Mm-hmm.
So we quit going up there, and we maybe drive up there once a month, you know. And got to where they, I think about 2 months, kind of cooked us.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't come bring you a book. They wouldn't introduce themselves to you. And they didn't have a little handful of people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I told Frank, I said, that reason ain't got nobody there. They're all for Seth, and there ain't no Seth there. It's a selfish.
Yeah.
And so, in 17, you see, the war broke out in 17, World War One, and I was, well, Margaret, July, August, September. She wasn't quite three months old. And I joined church, and I was baptized. I asked Uncle Martin, I said, Uncle Martin, I said, you think if Frank joins and I don't go, he'll be happy. He says, well, I don't know what much you think he will be. I says, well, I won't. Whenever he joins, I says, if I don't join the same time he does, I'll get there before the meeting's over. So he even told call my doctor up and ask him if he's thought being baptized would cause me to be sick or anything, cause me to have cold pneumonia. He says, well, I wouldn't think so. Mm-hmm. He says, it's for a good cause. He says, the weather's warm. He says, why? He says, if you want to go bathing, he says, that wouldn't hurt, would it? I says, no, sir, I don't suppose it would. I was afraid Margaret being so young, uh-huh. You know, my first, that it caused me to have some affliction to my body or something. So Frank kept going, said to me, rub his head and he'd shake his head. And he said, well, I think I'm going back to my old stall tonight. I says, good. I said, go ahead. I says, I don't mind. Because I knew if he heard what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
So he went on up. Miss Dantzler was sitting on the head of me, Mr. Dantzler's mother. She was with me when Margaret was born. I just reached over and put Margaret in my lap. She says, what's you doing? I said, I'm going up with Frank. She says, oh, good. She says, I don't think it'll hurt you. And he hadn't hardly got up, said good, and got turned around, been received in. He hadn't hardly got turned around, right there, right behind him. He turned around and looked like it shocked him, so he wanted to sit down on the poor boy. And then as he turned around and looked at me, he kind of smiled. And he turned in and he says, I believe Brother Moncrief was preaching. He says, this is my wife. He says, I'm to be accepted from the Methodist Church, which I was a Baptist before, but they accepted me on my letter. Says you'll have to accept her on her letter and baptism. Which one creep? All right, says we'll make everything all right. And so we join the church again together. And he died a Baptist, and I guess I will too.
Now, Preacher Moncrief, he was up here at Birmingham?
Well, he wasn't come and went. We had to go and meet him. McIntosh, he'd come in on train Saturday evening to go get him. And he was set out of a house, Mr. Smoke's house.
Oh.
I couldn't marry Gray's house. And she was she living? No, I don't think. I think she did. Miss Mixon. Some different ones.
What Mixon's that?
Lily Mixon. Ben Mixon's wife.
Oh, excuse me.
Sybil's mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Willie's mother in law.
Yeah.
Now you have it. And anyway, amongst the surrounds, you know. Would keep him Saturday night, Sunday night. Well, whoever kept him Saturday night, another family would take him Sunday for dinner. Well, that night he'd leave from there and go to somebody else's house, some services that night.
Yeah.
They'd get him back to the train. They just worked it around.
Yeah.
And, well, for quite a few years, we had has a whole preacher body. Mm-hmm. We had a preacher come from Perry, Florida, come down here to preach. That's a medium in Williston.
Gee whiz. That's really, really, really going way off, isn't it? But now, there at the war, you all had a revival for months' time.
One solid month. It started on one Sunday morning, and it run for a solid month, 4 weeks, day and night, except Saturday nights. One preacher we had one day says, "Well," says, we won't keep y'all in church tomorrow night," says. "You just cook, let the ladies cook and fix up for dinner Sunday, and you men reshave, clean, take your baths on Saturday nights, and let the women folks get their baths." Say, "Well, I'll be back here Sunday morning."
Yeah. Well, now that was a good feeling, wasn't it?
Well, just felt like we just having a good time with the Lord, that was all. And
yeah.
Boy, them preachers preached then, they preached for peace.
Oh, did they?
And as I was telling Betty and you, something mentioned about Woodrow Wilson, you know, he was our president in 1917, that's 54 years ago.
Yeah.
Margaret born 17, so we can remember. And now, there was a saying about Kaiser Bill, you know, he wanted to run the war over there in Germany. And Woodrow Wilson, he was the president here in the United States. He, well, of course, he wanted the war stopped if it could be stopped. But they had a saying about Woodrow Wilson sitting on the fence, trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents. Now that was our president, the United States president. And then they got going, Kaiser Bill went up the hill to take a look at France. When he come down, he found a bullet in his pants. That went on for a long time.
But the preachers were praying for peace.
Praying for peace. And a lot of the members was too, because a lot of them had boys in them.
Sure.
Yeah. Now,
and twist that old bone around on that little skin, and it sure hurts. It's like somebody struck a match and stuck it on my elbow.
Now, you didn't feel then like you do now sometimes, you know, like you feel now, so much going on over that little church, I don't care whether I go or not.
And you know that new church down there, don't seem no more to me like a church should feel to me. Because, you know, me and my husband and all of my children join the old church.
Yeah.
And this new church has been put up since he died. Of course, he put quite a bit of money in the treasury towards building the new church. We didn't live to see it. And we can all remember, we can't have mine, nothing can remember. And say my oldest grandson was born the year that church was dedicated, when it was finished, and they had the big dedication day there. He was a little boy laying over in Williston Hospital.
Oh.
As Rocky Martin's boy.
Yeah.
And he was born in 49. And that church was built in 49 and dedicated. Of course, that recreation room been built onto it years later. But
But it doesn't seem like the church that you knew.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, Frank had lived and come on in 2 years, see. But he passed away before the church was. He died in 47. And the church was built in 49.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a little different organization, doesn't it?
Yes, and then to think, the hard scuffling and scrambling that all had to get money to either repair the old church. It was just one long straight building. They either wanted to repair it, put new blocks, new sills, whatever's needed, you know, and then put some classrooms on the sides and build a baptistry. At that time, we were baptizing down at Remington Farm.
Yeah.
I was. Mm-hmm. And Margaret was. Well, in fact, all my children baptized down at Remington Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't none of my children, but grandchildren, they've been baptized in the baptistry and that church. And my husband's funeral was preached in the old church.
Yeah.
And Jim's was preached in the new church. And his marriage was the first wedding in the new church.
Is that right?
Is that right? Yeah, how do you know? Well, they didn't want to do that. What, they didn't want to just add on to the old church.
Well, after everything come on like it did, you see, and they had to, well, the way we making money to build for the new church or build a hall, whatever you call it, we'd have every fifth Sunday in the month, we'd have a big dinner on the ground. And a lot of churches, other people, and people from other churches would come there, all put in a big donation.
Yeah.
They didn't buy the dinner, I understand, but they were just there for the meal and to help make up collections and all for the new church. Well, time passed on, and the day of the dedication, they had long tables down. Counters like, you know, down on both sides of the church. And then they had a kind of a short one across this way. And then they had a lot of the old church benches outside for people to sit in outside. And there was lots left in the church. And we were all serving and waiting on people, you know, fixing plates for them and all. And handing them. Some would fix the plates to find out what they wanted. They'd fix them and just keep them going. Pretty much everybody come in to want the same thing. Just kept them going.
Mm-hmm.
Right on down. Then they'd come back. Well, they'd come in on this counter over here at this door. And it'd go down this way, it'd get down there, then you'd have to cross over that short table. And, you know, it was just boxed in, just like you see within that wall, and it closed in. All they had to do was come down this side of the table here, and go right on around on the short table. And then right on back out that way, come in this door and went out that door with plates full and the hands full.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And one time I'm glad I didn't furnish no silverware and on no dinnerware.
Yeah.
I never found
you
it.
You never found it in all that, would you?
Now this, by that time, Everett had pretty well taken up with you all, Ms. Chitty.
Well, he'd been coming down there a good bit before Frank died, you see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, over at your house, he just took up with you all.
Well, when I say he'd been coming down there at our house.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But him and Frankie, they had their little disturbance, so he don't come around much anymore.
Yeah. But now he did for a long time.
Oh, you might say he lived there on Sundays and Saturday nights. Cup of coffee, cup of Joe, he'd call it, a cup of mud. As soon as he'd come in from the show, hey, I've got a cup of mud, I've got a cup of Joe.
Oh, that's right, they'd go over there and go to the show.
And then on Sundays, he'd be there for dinner on Sunday. Supper Sunday night, then eat your supper, you can want a cup of Joe, cup of mud.
And that went on a long time.
Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years, I
think.
Yeah. When I went home for him, Frankie had that little little disagreements.
What was that about?
I couldn't tell you.
Vegetables?
No.
Frankie told me about it one time, but I forget.
Everett owed him some money and he wouldn't pay it to him.
Over some vegetables. They raised some vegetables together, didn't they?
Mm-mm.
Frankie told me about it, and
him and Miles had vegetables, but him and Everett didn't have no vegetables. This was, Frankie was busy working, and he really didn't have the time to give Everett to work, you know, and got up then. I think it, long then they wasn't paying as much then as they are now, you know.
Sure.
Anyway, it amounted to $5, and Everett told me, he says, well, Frank says, I don't have the money right now. Well, his brother, Ernest, he was kind of crippled up at that time and wasn't able to work. And what made Frankie so mad with him and made it so provoking and all. My Frank, it coming there one night, blowing off of that. Well, you see my shoes, kid? Got me a pair of new shoes.
Yeah.
I like them. Frankie says, well, they look pretty good. Everett says, I wished I had me a pair like. And he told me it cost about $15 or $16.
Goodness.
Frankie says, well, they look pretty good and the price is pretty good too, says, but no. He says, I couldn't afford to put that much in shoes. And I kept on going. Finally, he says, now I tell you, he says, I and so-and-so, my brother's daughter, my little niece, my brother's daughter was down in Ocala for something. We seen so-and-so. And of course she was needing shoes too, so I bought my niece a pair of shoes. Frankie says, well, how about paying me what you owe me, Everett? Says, and I can buy me a pair of shoes too. Well, I wasn't getting that. But Everett, he floored up, you know.
Oh, he did?
Why, Miss Chitty?
And he says, well, I says, you can put shoes, 15 or 16, whichever, dollars in a pair of shoes for yourself and $5 or $6 for your niece, hand me mine that you owe me, and I'll put a little more away and get me a pair of shoes, too.
Yeah.
Oh, he got mad with Frankie.
Oh, he did.
Frankie says, well, says, that's where you feel about it. He says, I don't want you coming around here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't you come around getting mad that way anymore. And of course, Everett, I think Cheryl was Frankie's and money.
Oh.
That's right. But they had a they had a lot of good times together, didn't they?
Oh, they used to be just like they grew up in the house together.
Yeah.
You see Willie, he married off. Martin, he married off when he come back out of service. Well,
yeah.
Willie was married when he went in service.
Yeah.
Well, that's the two little boys, as he used to call them, two little chitty boys.
Yeah.
Where's the little chitty boys?
Yeah.
That left David, Frankie, and Monroe. Well, it wasn't long before Monroe was taken up.
Yeah.
And old Everett, Jim says, look pretty raggedy and lonely when they called Frankie in, but Frankie didn't stay too long.
Yeah.
So Everett was right there with your boys.
Right there with the boys. And if there's anything, you know, where's Frank going to go? We, at that time, we didn't have no way of going but the horse and the wagon.
Yeah.
When Willie married, he'd taken over the car. So we'll show up. Well, we had no way to go anywhere, only as Willie seemed fit to come and take us. He went in service.
Yeah.
Sybil had the car, and she hardly ever come around it. And when they moved over to, what's it called? Over there.
Oh, you mean Sybil
Brunson.
Brunson.
Uh-huh. Working in that foundry over there,
yeah.
Cheryl foundry. Well, when Willie was called away from there, Sybil had to call. All she had to do was come around the other way and come to her mama. She hardly ever come around by us. And now we heard from Willie. It was by car, the letter he'd write from Camp Brandon.
Uh-huh.
But when he got in real service, well, yonder and somewhere around New York and other places, I don't think I got a half a dozen letters from Willie all the time.
Well,
why
but,
Willie?
But you did get a letter. I don't know whether he'd write or not.
He'd write, but he never did write it on Mammy and Daddy much. I guarantee you that. We got a letter about every 3 months from Willie when he was gone, and he wasn't going any further than Martin and Monroe. They were out on the waters.
And they
he
wrote
was
you?
On the land, but he knew we hardly got past. No, I never got a card from you.
But they wrote you.
But I got a letter from you every week from Martin.
Oh,
in
that right?
7 weeks that he was shipwrecked over on the place where he was shipwrecked. Yeah.
Is that right?
And for 7 weeks we didn't get a letter from Martin. I didn't tell you it's one that Frank had and died of heart attack two,
yeah.
Three times.
Because you'd been used to hearing and you knew.
So used to getting a letter every week.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we didn't have a radio where we could hear the news. Margaret and them had a radio. Well, we'd go up that night and listen to the radio. Get the night news, you know, on the wall. And then we'd go to some of our other people's house.